Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit Simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C., you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. And did you know this show is based off of a bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate? It's called The Tidbit, of course, and in it we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. Five quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co to sign up. And on The Tidbit this season, we've discussed ways to increase your access to social capital and how to create infrastructure and support for entrepreneurial ecosystems. We continue to sit down with entrepreneurs themselves to discuss these tidbits of knowledge and lessons learned along the way. And we've begun showcasing our buyer partners and the opportunities they see in increasing demand for local small business products and services. But a crucial part to this equation is the consumer drive. The demand generation that we as citizens, as consumers, are placing on these buyers to force their hand in creating a sizable shift in how they view procurement and how that money is shifted between big and small. So there is nothing that excites me more than a movement to shift consumer buying behavior around shopping and ultimately voting with your dollar. And we need more spaces and ways for us to stand up for what we believe on an ongoing basis, not saving our statements for one time per year. And, you know, as I make this statement, I will note that today is election day. And yes, you really need to go out and vote, please. But remember, you know, it's not just one day every once in a while that matters. It's how you show up in the world, the relationships you develop, the stakeholders you engage, that interconnectedness. It all matters. It all matters. And earlier this year, an article was written in Washington City Paper titled, "How Andra A.J. Johnson Will Bolster Black Ownership of D.C. Bars and Restaurants." The piece goes on to highlight, the 30-year-old is about a year into working on a book, White Plates, Black Faces, which addresses the African-American experience and the cultural neglect in the local restaurant industry. Johnson says, "It's not just a book. It's me collecting stories and doing interviews. I can't tell this story if it's just opinion-based. It has to be fact-based. This is our collective experience." She distributed this questionnaire to and recorded the experiences of local Black restaurant professionals to bolster her observations. And she says her conclusions are based on a deeper understanding of the discrepancies she found while researching what she calls the wealth gap. And I want to just note here that this is a very important, crucial point. The wealth gap, the access to capital, and these historically racist structures society at large has put into place to minimize the asset attainment and retention for people of color. We talk about this in depth on the episode of The Tidbit with Xavier Brown of Soilful City. So I highly encourage you to tune into that discussion if you haven't already. But back to the piece, AJ goes on to be quoted in the Washington City Paper stating, "Johnson suggests there are two tracks that lead to restaurant ownership. In the restaurant industry, you either have to be on TV, court these private buyers who have really no idea how to run a restaurant, or you need to go to a bank. And historically, Black people have had a hard time going to banks and getting funding for anything." So how do we create these spaces for diversity and inclusion in entrepreneurship that isn't just a marketing slogan, but an actual shift of money and power dynamics? And I am absolutely thrilled to have AJ in studio today to talk about what's unfolded since this Washington City Paper piece, DMV Black Restaurant Week. And again, in fact, at this time of the recording, it is currently DMV Black Restaurant Week. So I'm particularly honored that AJ has taken the time to be with us and talk more about her and her team's growing vision. So we'll take a quick break and be right back with AJ.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to The Tidbit. We're live at the Line Hotel, and we're here with Andra Johnson, AJ, co-organizer of DMV Black Restaurant Week. Welcome, AJ.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I am so thrilled, and this week is DC's first ever Black Restaurant Week. Mm-hmm. Amazing, of which you're a co-organizer. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I will point out, when we say first ever, not that this idea of doing a week of celebrating Black business in the restaurant industry has not happened. There mm-hmm. have been a couple, and they've been sort of more of like a go out, social hashtag, boom, and we're going to be doing this for a week.
Sure.
Where ours is much more, we want to definitely highlight people throughout the year, right? It's DMV Black Restaurant Week, but as that being a misnomer, we're doing yearly programming.
Amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to dive into this further. So, I mean, let's keep going with it. Tell us a bit more about the origins of this initiative. What are sort of these outcomes you're hoping for, and why does it feel like the right timing? I know, big question.
The right time. Okay, well, let's start with the
origin story.
The origins, yeah. So from that article that Laura Hayes so graciously wrote, and thank you, Laura, very much for that, Dr. Erin Tucker from Georgetown University reached out to me. She wrote me an email and said, hey, I read an article about you. I'm fresh here from Chicago. I just took this job at Georgetown, and I want to meet you. Because I really want to talk about, you know, how to sort of further this and really get your perspective on things. Because I've coming from Chicago, it has a very sort of rich sort of Black business and eating scene. Mm-hmm. She's kind of like, where are all the people out here? And so I met with her, and she said, you also need to meet with my friend Farrard, because I think you all have a lot in common. And so we sat down, we had a meeting. And I sort of talked to her about my book, and I showed her my website and the sort of the video journals and things like that. I was doing the roundtables I was doing with professionals as well, because I wanted to take that initial interview I was doing with people face to face and put them in a room and sit them down and really sort of see how people were interacting. And, you know, they both were like, wow, okay.
There's something
there.
Yeah,
there's something there. And it's like, I don't really know what it is yet, but there's something there. And I was like, well, if you ever need me, I'll be around the city, racing, running around, working, but also filming and trying to get everything going with my book and finishing that up. And one night, I feel like I was at Unconventional Diner, actually. She came and met me there. And we're having a drink, and she's like, I'm doing this thing. And I think I need you to be a part of it. And I was like, well, what is it? She was like, I want to do a Black Restaurant Week. Like, I want people to know that, like, when they see our company, that we, like, have our hands in it, right? That we've touched these businesses, that we've given them the resources. And I was like, I am so down. I will be there. Whatever you need. You can't do this without me. And not that you can't, because Dr. Tucker's amazing. You can do whatever you want. But I wasn't going to let her go out.
Yeah, power of the collective.
You know what I mean? I was like, I have to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. Because it's something that I have spoken on for so long, and it's something that I do really feel strongly about, in the fact that I'm not native born Washington, D.C., but I've been in D.C., Maryland, Virginia for, you know, 20 years at this point. And being, you know, in the hospitality industry since I was 14, there's no way to describe to someone unless they see it with you, and unless you tell this. And if you say, like, oh, that's my experience, say, okay, that's only your experience, it's not what everybody else sees. And I was like, no, I need to have everybody behind me. And
yeah.
sort of tying those in as we were going around to these businesses, it was even like, oh wow, like, yeah, I mean, things have been, it's been okay, it's been not okay, you know. And really being like, okay, we have to get in here.
And it is such a challenging spot in at being a small business owner. You can feel that it's a very solo journey.
Yes.
And that, is anybody else experiencing this similar thing that is happening upon me right now? Yeah. And so for you to come together and create this collective, this movement, it, people are less, they feel less concerned, or how do I want to say this? The emotional support and that access to a social network, I mean, it's empowering.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the whole thing that even sparked the book, which I mean, it sounds like you read the article, but the whole thing that sparked the book was the lack of representation. That's sort of where it all started for me, was that we weren't being represented on the best of lists. We weren't I think I've counted three in the past 10 years in terms of Black owners on that made the Washingtonian Top 100, you know, and those are the things that they really sort of open your eyes, especially for someone like me who has the aspirations to own and have invested money in restaurants and bar programs and things like that, is that I can't be the only one that's out here like pushing it, right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to run that rat race forever. and so I think that from a connection standpoint, what we want to do with Black Restaurant Week, or DMV Black Restaurant Week, I should say, is really understand what the businesses need. And from what we found from our research, and obviously from talking with people, is the access, right? It's the education. And it's really the, like, hey, like, nobody told me I had to do this. Hey, I want to start selling liquor in my establishment. How do I go about that?
Yeah.
How do I go about finding, you know, qualified staff? And things like that. And, you know, for me, I'm like, you know, I will be
let's connect
the dots, and let's, you know, I can help you with that. You know, if you need it formulated in email and doing all the right processes and the steps, Dr. Tucker has you there. If you need the connection on staff and motivated people that are looking for opportunities, you can go to Farrard. Because, I mean, he's just so helpful, especially with the youth in this city. It's insane. And so I think as a trio, we really sort of, we fill in the blanks for each other and create one heck of a team. So
that's beautiful. And let's talk about your book, because I think this has sparked a movement unto itself because you've been collecting a lot of these stories. So how do your hopes for DMV Black Restaurant Week tie into the book you've already been working on, White Plates, Black Faces, and when and where can I get a copy?
So the way that I feel like it ties into Black Restaurant Week is because a lot of the things that I talk about in the book from personal experience, but also from the obviously collective experiences that are in there, is we hit on things like being pigeonholed. We hit on things like the lack of opportunity. We hit on things, especially in terms of the infrastructure and sort of the growth that's happened in D.C., you know, in the past 5-10 years, where we have this whole boom of, bad word, this is the gentrification boom, right? Which is great, and it's bringing dollars into the city, but it's also not putting dollars in the right pockets, and it's not putting dollars in the people that are already here. It literally touches on things like transportation and how people were literally not given opportunities because, you know, Metro shuts down at 12 now. I lost half of my staff at one point because they couldn't get to work anymore. And that's, you know, and they didn't want to be the ones to let anybody down. But the money's in the city, right? So if you move out of the city because you can't afford to live in the city, right? And so from taking that from a worker's perspective, if you look at it from the other side, from the business's perspective, it's then twice as hard for them to find people to come
find
and work.
The staff,
it's twice as hard to feel, again, as you spoke about earlier, to feel like somebody has your back in this and to be able to have the resources to go and build, you know, whatever restaurant you want that will appease to the new crop of people coming into the city and planting roots. And once that happens, then it's kind of like...
Totally. And and let's speak a bit more about your experience as... I mean, you have an impressive background.
I've been around.
As a bartender, a beverage director, and so you are acutely aware of both sides of that small business... struggle between the business owner and also the staffing, the employee and the employer. So can you talk about how that experience has sort of paved the way for the work you're doing now? Because I'm sure you've had many an experience and story that's accumulated to this moment.
All right. So I think, and I tell this story probably every time I talk to young youth, I always tell this story. And it's one of like my first job at Chili's, Rockville, the White Flint location. That was my very first job. I was a hostess. And
I think
busser.
White Flint is like rebranded now to like North Bethesda. Too.
Yeah, I think. I don't think they call it that anymore. But I was a young kid at Holy Cross, and my friend got a job at Chili's, and I was like, "Look, I want to be there. Give me a job because I want to get out of the house." And so I started there, and it was great. But I learned a lot from a lot of people. Right, that's probably the most like tight knit staff I've ever worked with. But one guy in particular, he really taught me how to move in a restaurant, how to carry those big old sizzling trays of hot fajitas, how to switch out the soda bags for the soda machine, how to expo tickets, how to run food, how to call tickets. I mean, he really was very integral in my growth. And his name was Mike. And I'll always say his name because he was amazing.
What a great mentor.
And so, I mean, he was probably maybe 4 years older than me at that point. But he was a food runner, busser, dishwasher, utility guy, right? But he knew how to fix everything. He knew how to do all the things. I leave for college. He's still a food runner, busser. I come back. I work a little bit during the summer. He's still a food summer busser. I come back one more time, and he's finally become a server. And he was there for at least 2 years before I started. And he was there at least 2 years like after I left. And really, a lot of that motivation was because he was like, look, like I'm starting a family. Like, I need to make more money. And when you have someone that is giving, 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 and you're not giving him the opportunities to shine and really, really show the company what he's worth, right? Like, then the ultimatum is, yeah, I do leave. And I start over somewhere else. And so that has always stuck with me. And it taught me, like, look, you got to know everything about the business. You have to know every single front and back in this and that. I went to culinary school. I've done my TAM training. I try to keep up on my beverage 3 months here, 3 months here on wine, liquor, beer. And I try to be as engaged as possible. But being that I've been put, I think in my career, I've been put in management positions so much, right? From like 19, I was like running full-on businesses. Mm-hmm. Not just like little coffee shops and things like that, but full-on food service businesses with liquor and, you know, I've got to cook some days and things like that. And so it was, for that to me, it was super eye-opening. But I think if I fast forward to something that really sort of hit me, was opening up the Tivoli, the Mayorga coffee that was at the Tivoli.
Interesting.
And that was before the shopping center was open.
And listener, if you're not from DC, we're talking about the neighborhood of Columbia Heights.
Yes.
Approximately 10-minute walk from where we're sitting right mm-hmm. now. 10-15-minute walk.
I used to walk past here. Actually, I lived in Woodley Park, and I was the opening manager. I was the AGM, so I would open. So 5 a.m., I'm walking down the street from Woodley all the way over. It was a nice, refreshing walk. Go drop my deposits, all this. But there were just a lot of, I mean, there's always people just hanging out on the steps because the Tivoli had been closed for so many years after the fire. And so there's obviously a whole lot of traffic going on because of the construction that's happening. But what happened is that you started to see a whole landscape. And so I'm doing my walk one morning, and I look across the street, and there were like low-income, like senior houses across the street before, and all of the stuff is on the sidewalk. And so I'm like, wow. What's happening there? Like I had to have been like 18 or 19. And I was like, what is going on? And it didn't occur to me that like, oh, these people are being put out. Mm. These people are 100% being put out. I'm opening a $1 million business right now. These guys that I'm working for put $1 million into this. And now I get what's going on here. Mm. Because they, I mean, to sustain a $1 million business, you have to have people that can afford your price points and that are looking for a higher end experience in this and a third. And at that point, Columbia Heights wasn't there. It was getting there. That was the start of, you know, it was getting the ball rolling, moving literally down that hill. That was one of those experiences. I was like, whoa, what is actually going on? And I think for the concept that we had, the neighborhood necessarily wasn't ready for it, right? We still had, you know, all the neighborhood kids sitting on the steps and other, hey, can I like come in, grab a cup? Like, of course, yeah. Like whatever, when you're trying to run a different kind of business. And that, it didn't, when we plop in a business that doesn't necessarily fit the community at large, then the community at large feels alienated. When you tell them, hey, you can't sit on my steps. Right. I've been sitting on these steps for 20 years. You can't tell me I can't sit on these steps. No, you legitimately can't sit on these steps, because then that presents, so that, like, people who are paying customers then can't get in the door. So you have this really weird dilemma of how do I connect with this neighborhood? And how do I then continue to gain and prosper and have a profitable business so that I can, you know, hopefully, if you're an honest business owner, give it back to the community and build more, right? So there was that. And then I think the other sort of big one, again, was the lack of representation on restaurant lists. Once I started running more sort of like higher-end fine dining restaurants and became the GM of like Macon and things like that, I realized that I was kind of like by myself in a lot of situations where like I would go out to dinners or go out to tastings for wine and things like that. I'm the only black person there, like legitimately the only black person there. And so, you know, it doesn't, you move through spaces, right? I'm a butterfly. I'm a social butterfly. You move through spaces. It's not like it's awkward, but it's just like, wow, it'd be nice to just see somebody else that looks like me here.
And while you are an absolute incredible human and have so much uniqueness, it would also be really important to have more representation.
Oh, most definitely.
In the room. And I thank you so much for sharing those beautiful experience. Well, not always beautiful, but enlightened experiences that you had. We're going to just take a quick break, and then we'll be back with AJ to talk more about the hospitality industry and representation specific to DMV Black Restaurant Week. You're listening to The Tidbit. We're here with Andra Johnson, AJ, co-organizer of DMV Black Restaurant Week. And listener, a couple of stats to just throw at you here. The number of African-American-owned businesses in the U.S. has grown steadily from 1.9 million in 2012 to 2.6 million in 2015. And black women tend to start more businesses on average. So, in that context, AJ, I would love to talk about, from a hospitality industry perspective, what's going on behind these numbers. And I'm sure you, again, have had a lot of experiences because of your book, White Plates, Black Faces. So what's going on here? What is this movement? Tell us more.
Yeah, I think, well, number one, not that I don't disagree with those numbers, and I do also think that black women, I mean, from a standpoint of even graduating college and getting their master's and getting, they're 100% like the most educated sort of as of right now. They're making strides and taking strides, which is awesome, which I think also gives them the confidence to build from a business structure and not feel like they have to be beholden to someone else before they hop out on their own, which I think is amazing.
Huge.
In the hospitality industry in general, I would beg to say that those numbers are a tad bit skewed, because I think when you go off of just a startup LLC, how many people have started their own business? Doesn't mean that they're profitable. Doesn't mean that they're actually that they've actually started like collecting dollars from it as of right now, but it also means that it doesn't have to be brick and mortar. You can have a business online now. You can have a business, you know, be an Instagram chef or be a caterer and things like that, and sort of move around and hop around. Whereas my focus with the book was really about looking at the stats of brick and mortar.
Mm.
How many black owned restaurants do we have that are brick and mortar, and how can we raise that number?
And creating that community space,
yeah,
because brick and mortar represents space and place.
Well, brick and mortar creates a lot of things and it opens up a lot of opportunities. One of the most important, I think, for me being is that you're looked upon from the community from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's from the customer that's walking into your door to the police officer that's walking down the street. You're treated differently when you own property. You have a greater responsibility to your community, but people respect you. They understand. They understand this is your business. This is your property. You put your heart and soul into this. Whereas I think if you don't have something tangible like that, people just sort of see it and they go, oh, okay, cool. That's so-and-so's doing X, Y, Z. Or they're selling this. And that's nice. And you know what I mean? Whereas mm-hmm. people walk into the door, especially in respect to the hospitality industry, it's about being hospitable. You're literally having somebody come down, sit down as if they're in your home. Right. And so there's a different level of respect that happens there, which is why I personally think that it's super important to have brick and mortar. And there are going to be people that don't agree with me in that. But I think as from a representation standpoint, especially in terms of the landscape of any city, especially this one, it makes a difference. It mm-hmm. makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just that brick and mortar ownership, again, tangible asset, physical property, mm-hmm. but then with that ownership and agency, what can you do from now you are the buyer, right? You are the owner. Mm-hmm. So what decisions can you make then with your purchasing power and the decisions you make and how you show up in the community? At Curate, we work with buyers who are looking to source from local small businesses. And in particular, a lot of buyers ask to source from women or people of color-owned businesses. One of our partners sources product from over 50% women of color-owned businesses, the products that they're sourcing, which I'm thrilled. So based on your experience in the restaurant business, in brick and mortars, how can we continue to support the owners to make the most meaningful change in how they're, is there anything we as consumers or other small business owners can do? And do you have any tips for our entrepreneur listeners who are looking to get into the restaurant space? Because it is a very different challenge than other aspects of the food system.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You got to have money to start a business. You have to charge a certain price point in order to afford to have a lot of great produce coming in, right? If you're doing a $18 per person, that's sort of like what your per person average is. It's much more difficult for you to go out and access
locally small businesses.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's much more difficult to do that. Whereas you have, businesses that like that. I've gotten funding to do X, Y, Z, and I can put this much money on here, and I'm committed to making sure that my food can be that. And I think that part of it is definitely difficult, but it's not to say it cannot be done. And so I think from a business perspective, what I would like to see and what I would say is that I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, especially Black entrepreneurs, is sit down and really, really figure out what you need from the jump. Figure out what you need from the start.
From the financial capital.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, seriously, DC may not be the place to do it. I want to see it all happen. And that's cross color. That is anybody. You need a lot of money to keep going in this right now because DC is so saturated with restaurants. But really sort of sit down and get that number together. What do you need to survive? What do you need to pay your staff properly? What do you need to provide the best quality experience? What do you need to provide the best quality product? And how can you use those dollars that you're making instead of holding on to them? How can you redistribute that back into the community so that they're, you know what I mean, and be able to help out great
along
initiatives
the
and
chain.
Along the supply chain. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that 100% gets lost. And that's, again, it's not a Black restaurant issue because people will resort to fried food and to like frozen food and things like that as often as they possibly can because they think that that's cheaper. But if nobody's coming in the door, then you have to rethink that policy. If you rethink the actual food part of this, start there and then expand out. And really, I mean, think about it before you open up your doors to go and make sure that the capital is there. DC has great initiatives. That is the one thing I will say, especially on the small business side. apply for those loans. Mm-hmm. Apply for those loans. There's a lot of people that are coming in and want to be on that urban track. Be a first adapter. Get in there. Get your business plan tight. And really sort of, and get some team members who have your back. But get those business plans in front of people that are looking to engage with the active community that's already here in DC.
I love it. And I also just want to throw out that it is called DMV,
yes,
Black Restaurant Week. And I am always a fan for regional ecosystem building, yes, in addition to obviously DC proper. So your reach again goes from Virginia all the way up towards Baltimore, even maybe
a little bit shorter. So we did want to keep it, like metro track,
the actual,
yeah,
DMV.
Partially because, I mean, big shout out to Baltimore and Richmond for having really, they have a very like heavy, thriving Black restaurant scene, which is amazing. Like every single time I go to either one of those places, I'm like, all right, I gotta hit here, I gotta hit here, I gotta here. But yeah, we wanted to make sure, number one, I mean, obviously don't drink and drive, but we wanted to make sure that it wasn't too far, right? We still want people from DC to want to go out to a place in Maryland they've never been. We want people, yeah, in Virginia to come into the city and vice versa. So we wanted to make sure that it was mostly metro accessible.
Love that. Thank you. And so, in conclusion, how can people support?
Oh my goodness.
How can we find out more? Who's participating? Give us the lowdown. How can we get involved?
All right. So from the beginning, we had said, go out. Go to your favorite Black-owned place or even your favorite Black-allied place. And Black-allied being that they either support the DMV Black Restaurant mission or they've got a Black chef or a Black GM and things like that. Take a picture of them, hashtag DMVBRW, because that's how we reached out to our restaurants in the first place.
Hashtag DMVBRW.
Yes, and our social team goes on there, and then we reach out to those businesses if they haven't already contacted us. So that's number one. Keep doing that, because this, again, is year-long programming. This mm-hmm. doesn't just end on the 11th. so outside of that, you can go to our website, DMVBRW.com. Okay, you can see all of our food and beverage participants and our dining members is what we call them. You can see all of our sponsors and that. Please go out to those restaurants and support those restaurants. And I cannot stress how important that is, because this is a great week and we're all having a lot of fun. But I do also have to remember that, like, even as we had this whole signing up process, mm-hmm. we had a business close before the week even started, you know? Mm. And so for me, like, I take those kind of things super personally, because I feel like I didn't do enough, but we didn't do it fast enough for it. To me, it's like, I should have done this last year. You know, I'm sitting behind a computer writing a book. No, we should have been out here in the streets trying to figure out how to get them this press and how to get them out into the scene. So please, 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 after this week is over, find your favorites, hit the favorites. You know what
keep
I mean? We've
going.
Got over 30 restaurants. Yeah. Keep going, keep going. We'll keep building. We'll keep pushing that out. Also, we've got continued programming and paneling all through this week. We'll be at Sobe this evening, watching the election results and things like that, and having a good time. We will also be selling our passport books, powered by the DMV Green Book. They are $10, but they carry about $200 to $300 worth of value in them. There's tons of discounts, and it's got a list of all of our participating restaurants that are doing just the week. It's a fun way to sort of, like, stamp off. And then, I mean, for me, it was like, it's the hand guide and the hand booklet, right?
I love that.
Somebody asks you, what's your favorite Black-owned restaurant? Now you've got a whole little pocket guide.
I got my green book.
Got your pocket guide.
Yes. Where can people get this?
So you can definitely, we're in the works of getting them to the Busboys and Poets locations at 14th Street, Hyattsville, and Shirlington. So this should be available soon for purchase as well. But you can also contact me personally and directly. You can hit me up on Facebook at Andra Lynn. It's AndraLynn. Or on Instagram at White Plates Black Faces. I do door to door. I will come and find you in the city. We'll meet up. I don't care with Cash App, Cat. I don't care what you need to do. we'll make sure that these books get into your hand, okay? And that's 100% a promise. And they'll be sold at all of our parallel events as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here, AJ. So, listener, as always, if you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss around starting a small business with a food and beverage lens, let us know. Head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co, and say hello. And until next time, remember to vote with your dollars and remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.